Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. Successful New York psychiatrist Richard Gallagher was skeptical yet intrigued when a hard-nosed, no-nonsense Catholic priest asked him to examine a woman for a possible exorcism. Meeting her, Gallagher was astonished. The woman's behavior defied logic. This was not psychosis, Gallagher concluded. It was, in his scientific estimation, what could only be described as a paranormal ability. The woman wasn't mentally disturbed, she was possessed. This remarkable case was the first of many that Gallagher would encounter. Sought after today by leaders of all faiths, ministers, priests, rabbis, and imams, Gallagher has spent a quarter century studying demonic activity and exorcisms throughout history and has witnessed more cases than any other psychiatrist in the world today. He joins me this week on Vox Novus to share his book, Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. Please join me in welcoming to Vox Novus, Dr. Richard Gallagher. Welcome, Dr. Gallagher.
Well, thank you, Victor, for the introduction.
Dr. Gallagher, please share with us your formative years and your understanding of matters of faith and spirit.
Well, I was actually born in New York City, near Columbia University, where I remain, interestingly, on their faculty these days. And I was brought up Catholic. I went to a Jesuit high school. And I went to Princeton, where I studied classics, had a scholarship in Latin and Greek. And interestingly, as I became very familiar with world history and ancient history, you know, I became very impressed how often the whole world essentially, you know, believed in evil spirits. So without any intention of necessarily getting involved in the field, I did get intrigued about the phenomena, and I eventually went to medical school and then did my psychiatric training at Yale. And then much to my surprise, when I was beginning to be an academic psychiatrist, this priest, who turned out to be a very prominent exorcist, came to my office one day, a little rumpled looking, and he said, "Dr. Gallagher, I'd like you to consult on a case I think is demonic." And, you know, I had been through what you may remember, Victor, as what they called the satanic panic in the 80s and stuff, 80s and 90s, where people were seeing Satanists everywhere. And, you know, I was very familiar with that as a clinical psychiatrist, which I still am. And so I said to him, "Well, Father, I'm a little skeptical of some of that stuff." And he said that, he said with a chuckle, "Well, then you're the perfect man for the job," because he wanted someone who, you know, was not overly credulous about demonic cases. And the rest sort of just happened naturally. He started sending me more and more cases, including a very flamboyant, rare Satanist who was dramatically possessed. I was later invited to join what's known as the International Association of Exorcists. Again, I'm not an exorcist, but as a scientific advisor. And then I was asked eventually to write articles and write a book. The book is called Demonic Foes. I recount my 25 years of experience with this. Again, keeping in mind, I'm a mainstream physician, board certified. I believe in science. I'm not in any way opposed to science. But I've just seen so many of these cases over the years, probably more than any physician in history, and that I felt I and was encouraged to put down my findings in a book.
prior to this calling, what was your first exposure to anything that might be labeled paranormal, and how did you react to it?
Well, again, growing up, it's not like I had any experience with that sort of thing. Between college and medical school, my brother reported an experience. We were both playing basketball in France. I was also a teacher in a French high school. And he claimed that he had gone to a local witch and that his longstanding warts on his hand had disappeared due to her supposed magical incantations. And I told him I was quite skeptical, but sure enough, his warts, which he had had for years, disappeared, and he unquestionably attributed it to this witch. I'm certainly not in favor of witches, and I think people should stay away from them. But on the other hand, you know, it alerted me that there were some of these strange forces that probably were trying to fool us and act like they were helping us.
Obviously, you read William Peter Blatty's book, The Exorcist, and you saw the film version of the story. What was your take on this?
Well, if you think about it, it concerns several interesting characters, including the priest who dies at the end, the character of Reagan, who was based on a real life case. There were a lot of details that were changed, obviously, but it was based on a real life case of a boy from Maryland. So you can imagine, as I was, you know, starting to think of psychiatry as a young man, I was intrigued by the priest who was the assistant exorcist, who, you know, was also a psychiatrist and came into this a little skeptical and then investigated it and sort of quickly became a believer. So, it not only intrigued me that it had such a great cultural impact, but, you know, it probably influenced me later in my professional career to at least be open to this stuff.
Prior to the experience that you started to allude to before that opened your interest in possession and exorcism, how did you view possession and exorcism?
Well, I was, I was brought up Catholic, so, you know, I was familiar with the Gospels. I never doubted God, but like a lot of college students, you know, I asked a lot of questions about my faith. I would say that I was certainly skeptical of the idea that I was going to encounter a number of Satanists, who are rare, or a number of possessions. And I just happened to be in the position, Victor, of hearing from people literally from all over the world, so that, you know, I've now become convinced, based on my experience, that not only are the historical reports of these cases very accurate, and in fact, over the centuries, the evidence is fairly massive. But in addition, even in modern times, these cases still exist, as Blatty himself knew, of course, although he didn't have, you know, he really didn't have that much experience with other cases.
In your work and research, did you determine how far back the first exorcisms may have taken place?
Well, as long as there's been recorded history, I mean, even in Samaria, where historical records began, there was belief in evil spirits, and so there were, you know, a priestly caste who would try to get rid of people who were felt attacked by evil spirits. I say evil spirits because, you know, there's a lot of different beliefs throughout history, you know, some evil spirits being dead souls or ancestors or gods and goddesses. It really wasn't until later Jewish and Christian thinkers that people became aware that these were fallen angels who had rebelled against God. But there's always been some sort of exorcists in every era of history, and presumably in prehistory. And almost all religions, by the way, you know, have exorcists of their own. Now, a lot of times, I would say, you know, non-Christian religions are associated with a fair amount of superstition and misconceptions about what they're dealing with. But there have been exorcists, whether they call themselves that or not, in pretty much all religions. I've come across them myself.
And we'll touch upon that a little bit later in the interview. So you went to Yale, the prestigious Yale Medical School. You got your MD and took up psychiatry. And there's a thing called the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Did that include anything about what we're talking about?
Well, it doesn't include possession as a formal category. It includes it as a belief that some people might have, and then it's sort of atheoretical about it. It's not exactly open to spiritual phenomena in that sense, and I understand that. You know, I mean, certain things can be studied by science, and certain things, you know, a lot of times we use the pseudoscientific term in modern times of the paranormal. This stuff really can't be, you know, pinned down by experiments. The evidence for that, which is not unscientific, the evidence for that is really historical. And just as, you know, we believe a lot of things, like George Washington was the first president, the evidence then depends on how sensible and credible is the evidence. But that's a type of knowledge, too. And that's really what we're talking about here.
Please share with us the event that opened your mind on this subject and to the possibility that these events were real.
Well, the first case that the priest sent me to evaluate was a woman who was reporting, she and her husband, they had come like 2,000 miles to see me and this priest. And she claimed that she was literally being beaten up by spirits. She had bruises all over her body. So we did a number of tests on her. We wanted to make sure she didn't have any kind of blood clotting disorder or anything like that. And eventually I had to tell the priest that I thought that this had some kind of spiritual, or technically what we would call preternatural or diabolic causation, that at least it didn't have any typical medical or psychiatric explanation. And he said to me, "Dr. Gallagher, you know, that's what we believed, but, you know, we wanted to get a doctor's opinion because we believe this is not a possession, but an oppression, which is a, you know, a less serious demonic attack than a possession." So I began to become familiar with the different categories. I saw a tremendous amount of cases because this priest and his colleague, who was an even more prominent exorcist in America at the time, in the Catholic Church, there were very few, you know, showed me cases and put me in touch with people all over the country. And eventually I was invited. I'm now the longest standing American member as a non-exorcist, but advisor to the International Association of Exorcists.
And back when this started, did you share any of this with your colleagues? And if so, what was their reaction?
Well, over the years, I really haven't, you know, gotten into many debates about this thing with colleagues. I'm by no means, Victor, the only psychiatrist who believes this stuff. I mean, I know psychiatrists because I go to these international meetings from all over the world who believe as I do. And even in America, for instance, the former head of the American Psychiatric Association, a fine doctor named Dr. English, who was also a Catholic. I mean, he supported my work, and he was my chairman at my medical college at the time. So it's not like I felt, you know, out of the mainstream or anything. In terms of, you know, other psychiatrists, yes. I mean, we all see people who are psychotic or have dissociative identity disorder or are very suggestible. And, you know, it's precisely my job and perhaps the main reason I wrote the book, to alert people, including people in this field, that they have to be careful to rule out medical and psychiatric illnesses. But when people say, "Dr. Gallagher, how does it feel to be out of the mainstream?" I say, well, First of all, I've never felt particularly discriminated against because of this. In other words, we live in a pluralistic country, which is fairly tolerant of religious differences. And we, of course, have freedom of religion in this country. But I sometimes say to people, well, what mainstream are you talking about? You know, if you're talking about the country, a majority of Americans still believe in evil spirits. If you talk about the world, there's no question, even in, you know, countries like Japan, where my book was translated, they believe in evil spirits too, obviously with a different theoretical perspective. And then throughout world history, the vast, vast majority of human beings have always believed in evil spirits, so of some sort. So, you know, I say to people, well, I don't really feel out of the mainstream using those criteria. I would say, given the majority opinion throughout world history, maybe if you're skeptical, you're out of the mainstream.
We've seen reports and read books about those who are possessed demonstrating feats of remarkable strength, use and fluidity of languages unknown to them, and other manifestations. What are some that you've encountered, and is there any scientific explanation for this?
Well, again, you have to be careful how you use the word scientific. You know, science comes from a Latin word. The Greek equivalent was episteme, which means, which is the root of epistemology. I mean, there is knowledge, and the word science originally meant knowledge. So I do think that we know that these phenomena exist. In fact, the historical evidence is massive. Just because it can't be subject to an experiment or something like that doesn't mean it's untrue. Well, these diagnoses or these discernments, which in the Catholic faith are formally made by an exorcist, but often require, you know, some help from a physician like myself, all these phenomena exist. And what you have to see in order to diagnose what we call an extraordinary attack of evil spirit, which includes, you know, both possessions and the more common oppressions, which sometimes can be harder to figure out, you have to see unequivocal evidence of a foreign entity. And that foreign entity, you know, sometimes will speak, showing tremendous hatred towards religion, towards church, towards God. But it will also often exhibit these other remarkable signs, which are beyond the powers of natural human ability. That's why we call the demonic preternatural, which means beyond natural. And that includes things like tremendous strength. I talked to a woman who had thrown her Lutheran deacon clear across the room. This was a 200-pound guy. She was about 80 pounds soaking wet. I've heard people speak all kinds of foreign languages, often to Catholic priests. They'll speak in Latin. And, you know, since I studied Latin, I know what they're saying. I went to an exorcism where the demon had put the person into a trance and was speaking. And this person spoke a fluent Slavic language. We didn't know what it was until the priest after the exorcism said to us, oh, by the way, she was speaking to me because my family is from Bulgaria and she was speaking Bulgarian. Just as commonly, you get these possessed individuals who have what in Latin is called latra, meaning they have hidden knowledge or occult knowledge of things. So, for instance, I dealt with this flamboyant Satanist, and she knew all kinds of things, like about how my mother had died, how other people had died. She could even see people at a distance. So she once said to me, well, in my third eye, which is a cult language for, you know, seeing in some special diabolic way, she said, I can see the exorcist. And she described him to a T, what he was doing. He was doing something unusual that day. And she described how he was dressed and all that. And I telephoned the exorcist, who had become a good friend of mine. And I said, you know, what are you doing today? And he said something like, well, who wants to know? And I said, just humor me for a while. He described exactly what this Satanist woman had discerned. Again, using a pseudoscientific term, it's what the parapsychologists call remote viewing. It's sort of like a type of clairvoyance. And, you know, at the end of our conversation, the priest said to me, that woman is something else, isn't she?
Absolutely. Personally, what was the most remarkable of these that you may have witnessed?
Well, the most remarkable case I saw was precisely that woman. She was a very committed Satanist. She was part of a cult. And again, I'm very careful to always say that there has been subcultural exaggeration and hysteria about Satanists too. You know, you can't think that they're hiding under every rock or found on every corner. But this woman was the real deal. She had a extremely dramatic possession. I spoke to about eight people after one of her exorcisms. She had levitated for half an hour. She was speaking all kinds of foreign languages. The room suddenly went cold and went hot. These were very credible people. I myself was aware of, you know, the strange stuff that would surround her, because the night before I met her, I'd never met her before. The priest wanted me to meet her. And the night before I met her, two cats in our house just went berserk. You know, my wife and I were in bed, and we could not understand why these relatively well-behaved cats all of a sudden were fighting and clawing each other like prize fighters. And we had to separate them. And, you know, we figured, well, there must be some cause. The very next morning, the priest introduces me to this woman that I call Julia, and I describe very well in the book. It's not her real name, and all identities are hidden, but every fact in my book, Demonic Foes, is literally true. She looks at me and she says with a smirk, the first time she ever met me, she says, well, Dr. Gallagher, how did you like the cats last night? So, and that had happened to an earlier psychologist as well. So I, you know, I knew I was dealing with the real deal. That was a pretty eye opener.
My guest is Dr. Richard Gallagher. His book, Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist, Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. Dr. Gallagher, please tell our listeners where they can get your book.
Well, it's pretty easily available. People tell me it's at a lot of the bigger bookstores. Obviously, it was published by HarperCollins. You can always get it at the HarperCollins website. In addition, it's what most people do is it's very, very easily available on Amazon.
And I understand there may be a movie in the offing?
Yes. You may have heard of Jason Blum. He's kind of a big, what they call, mocker in Hollywood, very prominent producer. He's done a lot of horror movies, as well as some other, you know, very fine movies. And he and I were in contact. He said to me, Dr. Gallagher, this is essentially the most interesting intellectual property, using Hollywood language, that he's ever seen. So, you know, I agreed to have him make a movie. It's going to be directed by a very prominent Hollywood director and screenwriter, Tom McCarthy. So I'm pleased with how the development is going.
Looking forward to it. My guest is Dr. Gallagher. His book, Demonic Foes, will be back with more after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week, Dr. Richard Gallagher, his book, Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. Dr. Gallagher, what would you say was the most remarkable that you ever personally witnessed, the most remarkable possession?
Well, again, we had been talking, Victor, about this Satanist woman, rare Satanist woman, who I think there are so many remarkable stories about her. I include her very prominently in the book. I think I could give you a number of anecdotes that would probably demonstrate, you know, why I thought this was the most dramatic. There was one time I was sitting in the car with the exorcist who had introduced me to this field, and all of a sudden she. And again, I called her by a pseudonym, Julia. She had she was sitting in the back of the chair, and all of a sudden, in very foul language, her voice changed, using her vocal cords, obviously. But she had gone into a trance, and this demonic voice came out of her, saying, "You know, leave her alone, you effing monkey priest." And you know, they tend to think of us as sort of these evolved beasts. Far inferior to them. That was pretty dramatic. Another time when the priest was attempting to get me to come to one of her exorcisms. I've been to about 200 exorcisms in my life, but you know, as a busy academic and family person, I have to turn down a lot too, just as an observer. And you know, while I was talking to the priest on the phone, in over the phone line, this was a landline, came that same voice. You know, you'll be sorry, leave her alone, you know, effing priest, et cetera, et cetera. And that was pretty shocking. I realized that, you know, she could even kind of invade my home. It's the only time in my life, you know, I'm a reasonably calm person. It was the only time in my life I'm sure you've heard the phrase, the hairs on the back of your neck went up. Well, literally, when I heard that voice, the hairs on the back of my neck went up. And I said to the priest, you know, you heard that, right? And he said, of course, in a incredibly dramatic possession of a Satanist like this, all these kind of strange things can happen. It was remarkable too, because not only was she a Satanist who told me about her cult, but you know, she seemed to trust and respect my opinion. She knew she was possessed, as did the priest. I wasn't needing to convince anybody. On the other hand, you know, I was there to talk about her ambivalence about getting help. And at the same time, she said to me, you know, Dr. Gallagher, you have my permission, as long as you don't identify, you know, anybody that I'm associated with, family members included, you can, you know, talk and write about that, my case. That's one of the reasons I've highlighted her, too, because she gave me explicit permission.
Is there another interesting or challenging case you'd care to share with us?
Well, you have a few hours. this is why I wrote the book. Another case by contrast, and I say by contrast, Victor, because the tragedy of this woman, who I call the Satanic Queen, because she herself regarded herself as the queen of her cult. She had done some grisly things, which I won't get into, but eventually became afraid that the cult was going to harm her for trying to get help. She often told me she trusted Satan more than she trusted God, who she didn't understand, a Faustian bargain if there ever once one, right? Mm. And so she dropped out, and she eventually died without being delivered. And the reason is because she wanted to have her cake and eat it too. In other words, I always emphasize to people, exorcism is not magic. you know, ultimately it's the prayers of the church for our Lord's assistance, number one. And number two, the person themselves has to work at it. They have to renounce their sins. You can't remain a Satanist and expect to be delivered of a possession. By contrast, for instance, there was a gangster that I met, and he had become, you know, prominent in his gang, Hispanic American guy. He had also turned to Satan, one of these sort of devilish Mexican cults, Santa Muerte, and he got possessed after a lot of success, which he attributed to his Satan worship. He got caught by the police. He got sent to prison, and the clergy person in the prison, you know, diagnosed him as possessed and started a series of exorcisms. By the time he got out of prison, he was still somewhat possessed, because sometimes these things take a long time. And he came to one of the dioceses. Catholic Church organizes these things by diocese. And the exorcist there had me talk to him. But he was, by that point, very, very committed to returning to the church. He had been baptized as a kid, as had the Satanist woman, by the way. And so he really worked at it, and he was eventually delivered. So it just shows the contrast between, you know, two different cases. You have to, you know, the old phrase, God helps those who help themselves. You have to renounce your past misdeeds, and you actually have to turn to our Lord yourself.
What do you think, based on your research and your work with these people, is the attraction to Satanism?
Well, you know, people throughout history, and I would include a lot of pagan cultures, which the Hebrew Bible, the Tanakh, was very aware that people who turned to the pagan gods, in a sense, were doing something demonic. But these cultures, including their human sacrifices, which was not unusual in the pagan world, you know, as evidenced by the Aztecs and the Carthaginians and the Phoenicians, for instance, these people think they get something out of it. In other words, they're not. It can sound foolish, and in one sense, it is foolish to engage with evil spirits, as you understand that, whether you understand them as, you know, fallen angels or pagan gods or whatever. Certainly, as St. Paul thought. Just like this Satanist woman I talked about, she liked having her powers, and she somehow felt after death that Satan would reward her, this sort of thing. So these are not, you know, totally irrational people. You know, we obviously think they're mistaken. And like the Faust story, we think it's a foolish bargain to get involved with this. But especially in their rebellion against, you know, traditional morality, you know, whether that's sexual or otherwise, they feel that they lead a more liberated life, and they feel that they get something out of their satanic practices. In many ways, they're unwittingly becoming slaves to sin and evil, but, you know, they're too short-sighted to see that clearly.
In addition to possession, as you had mentioned earlier, there is also oppression. What are the similarities and differences between these?
There's a lot of terminology. You know, some people call oppression vexation and stuff, because it's harder to diagnose. It's can consist of attacks on the senses, for instance, in the gospel. You know, the possessed individual who was mute and deaf. I've seen those cases too, where people get deaf or have certain communications that they regard as credible. And at the same time, they also can be physically attacked in different ways, choked, scratched, pummeled, as in the first example I gave. So there's a wide variety of oppressions. People use different language. They are a more attenuated form of attack. In other words, possession is where the demon at times, they seem to come and go, but presumably they're there. They really can control the will of the individual. In oppression, they're more or less attacking the individual without necessarily gaining control over the person's will. Some of the same things that lead to possession lead to these more limited types of oppression. People may, have turned to evil. People may have gotten involved in occultism of a serious degree, going to witch doctors or things like that, getting involved in highly superstitious activity, like trying to channel spirits and that sort of thing. So they've kind of opened a door, as it's often said. So it's a kind of, again, attenuated possession, but not as serious.
From your work and experience, how would you define demons?
Well, I unequivocally think that they're fallen angels who have rebelled against God. I mean, that's the traditional Christian theological teaching, as you know. But I think I have validation for that because I've attended enough exorcisms, Victor, that these demons almost always, well, they pretty much always lie. But especially early on, they generally pretend to be someone else. So in the Jewish tradition, for instance, they were often described as dibbiks, dead souls who are harassing people. So they present themselves as dead souls, sometimes prominent dead souls, like they may say, they're Hitler or they're Judas Iscariot or something like that. Other times they have presented in even in modern times, I've had a couple of possessed individuals who, claim to be possessed by Zeus or some other god like Aphrodite. And again, it sounds crazy, but, they have reason to believe that because the demons who are attacking them are precisely pretending to be those entities. It reminds me of the old story of the Delphic Oracle. The Delphic Oracle was a young peasant woman who would go into a trance and out of her mouth would come supposedly the voice of Apollo giving these gnomic or very dramatic readings such that people all over the Roman world, the Greco-Roman world, would go to consult her. She was possessed, and that was a kind of temporary possession, voluntary. And there are these different types of possessions. There's voluntary, involuntary. Mostly we encounter people who want help who have it involuntarily. But for instance, the MS-13 gang tends to try to summon spirits, obviously very condemned in the Hebrew Bible. And they allow themselves to be taken over by an evil spirit for a while. But the point I was making was that despite the fact that they pretend and lie that they are all these other kind of entities, interestingly, in successful exorcisms, pretty much invariably, they are forced, again, not by the priest, not by the minister, but they're forced by our Lord himself to reveal who they really are. And it's not so much that that's magical in itself, but what is happening is that they are being compelled to tell the truth, which they are reluctant to do because they're exposing their identity. And when they expose their identity, they invariably have to acknowledge that they're an evil spirit. So, that's why I believe that they're evil spirits who are fallen angels, because that's what they themselves admit.
Do demons ever ask to repent, ask for forgiveness and healing?
No, and that's why they are estranged from God. You know, if they could do that, or if they wanted to do that, they wouldn't be where they are. They have chosen to rebel from God. Now, again, you and I and a lot of people would say, what a foolish choice. And, you know, I think some of them think was a choice that they regret, but they don't regret because they feel that they should submit to God's will. They just regret because they know they're in an unhappy place, you know, whatever the society is like, which I don't think anybody knows for sure, but it's not a happy place. But they've chosen that. And, you know, another traditional Christian teaching in this area is that people have free will. Nobody has to attempt to follow God's will if they don't want to. God doesn't force himself on people. And so these people have sort of chosen their own fate.
My guest is Dr. Richard Gallagher. His book, Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist, Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. We'll be back with more after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Dr. Richard Gallagher. We're talking about his book, Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist, Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. Dr. Gallagher, what other forms of paranormal experiences have you encountered and investigated, and what would you share with us about them?
You know, in my title, I say that I've investigated the paranormal. You know, I originally wanted as a title to say the so-called paranormal, because the term paranormal is a modern term. In my opinion, it's a pseudoscientific term because it doesn't really explain anything. You know, it's just sort of this grab bag category of odd things that materialistic science can't explain. Now, there are certainly cognitive misperceptions that make people believe in the paranormal. There are charlatans and hoaxsters, and sometimes it's just misunderstanding about certain phenomena that we don't understand well scientifically yet. But it's essentially an anti-scientific idea that arose in the modern time to describe phenomena that past eras of history put in the realm of good or bad spirits. So I and, for instance, the leaders of the International Association of Exorcists, of which I'm now the longest American member, we all believe that the paranormal is a pseudoscientific term, and that all genuine, as opposed to simply mistaken phenomena, can be interpreted as either supernatural. I mean, there are people who are spiritually favored, not by themselves, by the way, but simply by God's gift to have certain powers beyond the natural. And pretty much all the rest of the stuff, which is often scary or frightening, you know, like sort of infestations of ghosts and that sort of thing, almost all that stuff is actually diabolic. And, you know, I'm very convinced of that because I've seen many people who are channels of spirits, people who have consulted witch doctors or fortune tellers, and you know, they often get in trouble. I had a woman who came to me, and she had been to a fortune teller who said, and here's the reality of the paranormal. She said, you know, the fortune teller knew all about my history, and you know how I would go to Central Park with my uncle, and we had a great time. And she even knew his name. And I said, so you know, what's the problem? She said, well, the fortune teller also told me that I'm never going to get married. This was a young woman. She happened to be a physician. She was, you know, in her late 20s. And she was devastated by that comment. And, you know, basically what I said to her, Victor, was, you don't have to believe that. And, you know, I told her my view that, you know, these fortune tellers, they think they're gifted, but, you know, often they're getting fed information by a nefarious source. And I said, the other thing you have to realize is that evil spirits acting through occult practitioners will often fool them in various ways with all kinds of weird ideas. But they also will claim to predict the future, and that evil spirits do not know the future. They're very knowledgeable. They may be able to make good predictions about the future, but they don't know the future, nor do angels, by the way, and human beings certainly don't. The only person who knows the future, I believe, is God. There's a tremendous variety of things that have been reported to me. I've never really experienced anything paranormal myself, but, you know, I've witnessed these possessions and oppressions very directly, and obviously I'm witnessing something paranormal in other people. The classic paranormal stuff is often the people of, you know, houses that are affected by demonic forces, and that's a real phenomena too. You might say that's the third category, infestations of the extraordinary attacks of demons, aside from possessions and oppressions. So they're dealing with real phenomena, but to act like, you know, it's some kind of material phenomena that we don't understand yet is, in my view, hopelessly naive. People know very well that either this stuff comes from God or it comes from demonic sources. Interestingly, the Satanist woman that I talked about at the beginning, she claimed to have all these psychic powers, which she had. She could see people at a distance. She knew all kinds of facts about, you know, my life and the life of pretty much everyone she came in contact with. And it was all fed to her, she said, by Satan. So she said to me once, she goes, you know, these people, these, you know, paranormal people, mediums and all that, they think they're gifted. And she said, they're not gifted. You know, nobody is born gifted. And she herself acknowledged that people either get gifts from God or from, in her case, she felt, from Satan. I've always taken that to heart, because I think she was quite astute to recognize that there aren't these gifted people. You either get it from a divine source or you get it from a demonic source.
Many think of exorcism as something within the confines of the Catholic Church, but as you share, this is found in many faiths. Please tell us a little about the practice in the various Protestant denominations, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, others.
Well, it's a complicated subject. I'm a great lover of history. And again, I have a chapter about this in the book, Victor. It's hard to summarize it briefly, but I would say, first of all, there are many good Protestant, you know, ministers. I usually am more comfortable when clergy does it, who have some successes with these kind of cases. But of course, they're believing, just as I do, that ultimately it's by the power of God and our Lord Jesus Christ. During more ancient times, including around the time of Jesus, many Jews, writers and thinkers, it's even reflected in the Talmud, And certainly the Pharisees at the time of Jesus believed in evil spirits and accused Jesus of being in league with evil spirits. Some of the, what they call the intertestamentary literature, the literature between the end of the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, and the New Testament, also reflected very sophisticated beliefs about demons being fallen angels. So Josephus himself, the Jewish historian, writes about Jewish exorcists, and it's quite clear that even though Jesus amazed people with his power, you know, that the Jewish inhabitants, of course he was Jewish himself, the Jewish inhabitants at that time definitely believed in exorcism. I've talked to people in other religions too, Hinduism, Islam, I guess, would be prominent, and even in the pagan cultures of East Asia, they will often have different sort of priestly figures who, or in the case of the Muslims, imams, who definitely, you know, can achieve some positive results if they're, you know, if there is a good person. I don't think it's a, I don't think it's completely unimportant, however, that, you know, when Hollywood does these movies, they often, you know, take it as the original exorcist, as focusing on the powers of the Catholic exorcist. Catholic exorcists tend to have what you might call a lot of quality control. In other words, they're very selective who they choose. It has to be a person who's knowledgeable and sensible and very holy. They have to go through a training period that's rigorous. They certainly need to make sure that they have proper discernment themselves, as well as, you know, the humility to turn to doctors, say, when it's necessary to make a difficult diagnosis. So they tend, I think, this can sound chauvinistic of me to say as a Catholic, but they tend to have, I think, the most success, especially with the more dramatic cases.
If someone genuinely thinks that they or a family member may be dealing with possession or oppression, what would you recommend they do?
That they try to find a local clergy person who is knowledgeable about this. You know, whatever their religion. I mean, certainly a Catholic priest, little known, sometimes even by themselves, they are supposed to deal with cases even outside the Catholic religion if someone comes to them for help. And again, the exorcism ministry, which has to be approved by a formal process through the bishop, it tends to be organized. So people could approach the local diocese, or probably more frequently, people will, you know, try to first talk to someone in their own church, a clergy person they respect. And of course, you know, in many cases, they have to make sure that they have ruled out medical illness, so they may well need to go to a physician. I mean, the trouble is, you know, some physicians are very open to these ideas and some aren't.
What would you like readers to take away from Demonic Foes?
Well, I really wrote it for two purposes. I wrote it to educate people who have direct involvement in this field, but I also wrote it for the educated public to understand better this convoluted subject. Certainly as a, you know, as a full professor of psychiatry at a couple of medical schools, you know, I'm also very aware that, you know, people have to accept that many people with medical or psychiatric illnesses in the past, sometimes people with epilepsy, for instance, that are better diagnosed nowadays, but often in modern times, people with different psychiatric disorders who hallucinate, who may have multiple personality, now called dissociative identity disorder, or who are extremely suggestible or manipulated by people into believing they have demonic attacks. You know, the majority of those people do not. And so sometimes, you know, the most sensible first step might be just to get a doctor's opinion. I think people have to be very rigorous about this stuff. I mean, this, they have to be scientific. I'm a scientist, you know, I believe in the Big Bang and all that. And I'm not a fundamentalist in that sense. And the other aim of the book is to, you know, present it as a scientifically credible subject.
My guest is Dr. Richard Gallagher. His book, Demonic Foes, My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist, Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. Dr. Gallagher, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book.
It's a book that, you know, you can get at most bookstores, from HarperCollins website itself. The easiest way, as people do for many books these days, is just to get it on Amazon, where apparently it's selling quite well.
Dr. Gallagher, thank you so much for joining us and sharing this fascinating story.
You're welcome, Victor. Thank you for a thoughtful interview.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the voice, Furman. Have a wonderful week.